This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on point and Anna Knox. Here's Wilson, and on the right side, and he scores!
Welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point, talking to you live to tape once again from beautiful downtown Glen Burnie, Maryland, on a blustery yet nice sunshiny day. Spring is finally here, and I'm loving it, loving the sunshine, loving the warm weather, warmer weather, that is. But we're still in the midst of a hockey season, down in the stretch, as they say. And so, the Mermaid's not going to join us. She is out on spring break. She'll be out this episode and next. But I think we've got a great treat for you listening out there, especially some of you diehard fans of the show and of the Caps. We've got not one, not two, not three, but four gentlemen. Yes, well, the guys are taking back over the show now that we've had Women's History Month. Four guys on with me, all Caps fans, diehard Caps fans. We're going to talk about the Caps and going to take a couple questions from the listeners, from other listeners that have posted in. Going to discuss the Caps and how they've been doing, what we're looking to see them do here. So got one first timer. We'll introduce him last, but three others that have been on the show in the past. So first, I'd like to introduce one of them. Hasn't been on in a while, but an old friend of mine from high school, and he's longtime Caps fan. You might remember him. He actually went to the Navy Marine Corps Stadium game and saw the Caps play the Maple Leafs live there. It is Ron Schrantz. Ron, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Great having you on. How you been doing lately?
Oh, pretty good. I actually just started a new job. I'm out of doing the actual physical labor thing. Now I'm doing more of the so I'm working for the Home Depot distribution center as the distribution manager. So
awesome.
Good stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not swinging the hammer anymore, as you will.
Hey, you know what? Whatever you got to do to earn that paycheck and make it all happen. Keep the bank account happy.
Right. That's right. But yeah. So. Yeah, interesting season. I think we started off pretty good. I enjoyed the trip out to the western part of Canada. I thought we did pretty well out there. And then, okay, of course, we came home. And most recent one, we'll try to put that one to rest against Carolina.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Oh, we'll get to that. Trust me. Okay. So yeah. Good having you on. Okay. So, next, second guest on, he's been on before, about a month or so ago, by way of La Belle Provence. He's, actually in, Virginia now. Willem, I'm sorry. I forgot which city you're in. Did you say Herndon or,
I'm at Manassas.
Manassas, yeah. Manassas. Yes, sorry. Sir. Sorry.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, but a longtime Montreal Canadiens fan, transplanted Caps fan as well.
Yeah.
We had a good long discussion about not only the Caps, but hockey in general. Can't wait to get your input here for what we're going to be discussing as well.
It's so much fun being among all these great hockey fans. Growing up in Montreal, I mean, I remember, and I'm old enough, I actually saw Bobby Orr score the goal he's famous for in 1970 on TV. So,
sweet.
Yeah. So, I mean, from way back when, and watching hockey the way it was in the 70s and the 80s, and bitter rivalries, like unbelievable ones, even coming now today and then about 12 years ago moving down to Virginia and learning all about the Caps – man, am I ever glad to be among the people here who are Caps fans, because what an amazing group of people and such a great team to watch with such amazing talent. So, you know, I watch lately, I've been watching a lot of the games, and we have our good days, we have our bad days. And there are sometimes we ask ourselves questions, why is our team not playing so well? But, you know, this is what we're here to discuss. It's friends who are sitting around a table talking hockey, and I can't think of anything I'd rather be doing.
Awesome. Glad to hear it. So, yeah, doubly glad to have you on back again. Can't wait to get your opinions on some things here. Okay, so our third of the four, also another old friend of mine. We go all the way back to grade school. He's been on once or twice before. Doug Lucerarian. Doug, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. How's everyone doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Glad
to hear
it. Looking
forward to doing all this. And, you know, outside of just doing this virtually, love for all of us to get together, have a beer, and watch a game together.
Oh, hell yeah.
Absolutely. I've been looking forward to meeting you, Doug, for a long time. So
yeah, that we'll trust me, we'll make that happen sooner or later.
Got to make it happen.
Yeah, we will.
Heck yeah.
Maybe we'll make a whole road trip out to Eastern Kentucky. We'll go visit Casey and welcome him among the fold. That'd be kind of fun, I think.
That would be awesome.
That would be. Yeah. That would be. Well, speaking of Casey, so this is our final of the four. Casey, of course. This would be his first time, so we're going to treat him to the Power Play Point podcast version of the rookie lap. So Casey's never been on with us before, and he's actually somewhat newer to Caps fandom and in hockey in general. But that does not mean, of course, he has less to contribute. In fact, he has just as much, I would say, and just as much passion, certainly. So can't wait to hear from him. So, Casey, this being your first time coming on, so tell your story. How did you get started being a Caps fan?
It really is strange. Willa mentioned I'm from Kentucky. And if you know anything about Kentucky, basketball is right up there with God.
Especially yeah. Horse basketball. Horse racing too.
Maybe more to the outsiders. I would say, you know, our city people probably think about that more than that, but the generalized state isn't as crazy about horse racing as you would think. It's much more of a tourist attraction in some ways. But basketball is the be-all, end-all of all sports here.
I can imagine all those national championships, all those winning teams, the Kentucky Wildcats, University of Kentucky. Yeah. All those great teams. Yeah, certainly.
Absolutely. So I grew up immediately being ingrained in the Wildcat fandom. And one of the first movies that I ever got to see in theaters with my father was Space Jam. And I fell in love with Michael Jordan. And by the time I had actually realized that NBA games get played on TV, that I was probably somewhere around 8 years old, which, again, I was, unless it was professional wrestling, I never watched anything on TV as a kid outside of Kentucky basketball. So Michael Jordan had just started playing for the Washington Wizards when I was 8, and I become enamored with the Washington Wizards. And basically, as I got older, one of the things that I enjoy in life is never being complacent with what I know. I love to search out and learn new things, study new things, and grow as best as I can as a person. And I realized that in my life, all I had really come to generally understand and love was basketball and pro wrestling. And I was like, you know, I want to try some new stuff. And I knew the Caps had won a cup in 2018. My best friend in college is a St. Louis Blues fan. I had a college professor who lived in St. Louis who was a Blues fan. And I always had this interesting idea about hockey, but I had never really taken that step. Well, I decided that I wanted to at least try it. And the Capitals made sense because they're owned by old Ted. And so there's the Wizards connection. So I decided to get NHL 21 because I learn a lot of stuff through video games. And I really love that introduction video to Alex Ovechkin, who was on the cover. And I decided that it was time to actually watch. And it's 15 days. I'm 15 days shy of my first game a year ago. Because it was right after the trade deadline. We acquired Anthony Mantha. And I remember everybody being really freaked out about us trading Jacob Vrana. And I was like, okay, not really sure. And I watched that first Boston game on April 18th. And I was hooked. I mean, hook, line, and sinker. Have not missed a game. Have not missed but a handful of games. You can count them on your hand since that game a year ago.
Awesome.
Casey, have you ever been to an actual hockey game, though?
No, I've not. Okay, so
we need to get you there.
Yeah.
That will be the experience among everything. That if you like it on TV, just wait until you see it in person.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
My wife and I are actually discussing for our anniversary in October going up to Lexington, which is a couple hours from where I live, and watching the University of Kentucky's men's club play.
Yeah. Nice.
But my reward for I'm just going to be really blunt and open and honest with you guys. I have a lot of health issues. I'm a heavy set guy, and I've been trying really hard to cut weight like crazy. I'm at a point where I'm recently diabetic, and I decided it was lifestyle change time. So when I hit my goal weight, my dream is to take my first trip to Washington, D.C. and fit a Commanders, Wizards, and Capitals game all into the same weekend.
Yeah. Awesome.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I dig it.
I'm going to be cheering you on every step of the way, my friend, and anything I can ever do for you, you call on me, man. I'm always there for you.
Appreciate that. Yeah,
absolutely. This is Ronnie, and I will as well agree with that. I went to my first game at the Capitol Center in 1979, and I do agree. It's awesome to see on TV, but seeing it in person, when they score a goal and hearing that crowd cheer and the horn go off, there is nothing like it.
I can't imagine the electricity. I know. And it's a little bit of a tangent. I had talked about this on the page watching this Quest for the Stanley Cup documentary.
Yeah.
And even knowing we were going to win the cup in this documentary that's 3 years old, every time we scored, it was like the hair on my arm stood up. And that moment with Oshie talking about his dad after the cup, I'm not too much of a man to admit that I bawled my eyes out.
And I'm with you.
Me too, man.
Me too.
I think we all did.
I'm sitting here in my Oshie jersey, which I bought last year about this time, like shortly after realizing that I was going to go all in on this. And even my dog has a Capitals jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's awesome.
Totally
I tell you
awesome.
Something. I tell you something, Casey. That whole roar of the crowd thing, it's – way better than you could imagine, because even growing up in Montreal, if you want to have an example of how the roof can come off a place, there's the 1979 game. It's overtime, Montreal Canadiens versus the Boston Bruins, and it's the seventh game of the semifinals. And Guy Lafleur, this is exactly Backstrom to Ovi. It's Jacques Lemaire makes a drop pass to Guy Lafleur, takes a slap shot past Jerry Cheevers to tie the game and send it to overtime. The place exploded. And the reason I mentioned that, it's a good reference. You can catch that on YouTube. When I first moved down here and I started going to the Verizon Center at the time, Capital Center, Capital One Arena now, what was really amazing about going to this place, I've been to other arenas too, but everybody was so much come cheer alongside us. And what really hooked me was the passion of Caps fans here. I mean, you've got a team that's, you know, by Ted Starkey's book, by the way, The Red Rising, which I highly recommend, that the latest generation of the Caps from 2007 forward becoming a powerhouse team, and hearing the people cheer so loudly, and Wes Johnson doing his announcements and things. It's just the electricity in the building. It's going to be so worth it. But we can't wait that long to see you. I think we're all going to have to take a road trip out and visit you. That's just me.
Yep.
I'm much like our blue liner. I love good food and I love to cook. So I will make you all some of my specialties.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, you just nailed it on the head right there, buddy.
Glad to hear it. Kentucky, especially, well, the Louisville area, famous for a dish called the hot brown. I've always wanted to try that. Not to steer things too far out of control, but yeah, I do love food.
I got one more thing to add because I got to give her a shout out. My wife has just fallen in love with the Capitals with me. She is so supportive of this new venture. She talks about how happy she is to see that something makes me as excited as I am when the Capitals play. I fill up my Capitals tumbler and I'm ready with coffee and I watch the game. But we even have a tradition in our house that when Ovi or anybody scores, I immediately will yell, point on the board, let's go Cats. Unless it's Ovi, I'll yell, oh, captain, my captain, point on the board, let's go Cats.
Yeah,
we were watching a game the other night, and she yelled it out before I could, and I was like, "I've never loved you more."
You know something? I love this. I love this camaraderie. Me too. I mean, talk about a group. This is one of the reasons why I love this group so much. It's a true camaraderie among real friends. That it feels so good. And yep. Boy, I'd be glad to welcome you, Casey.
Yeah, definitely, Casey. You've proven your passion 100 times over on our Facebook page and just now. So we're extremely glad to have you on. And I just have one more question. Ask this or try to remember to ask this of all of our new guests. What exactly do you do for the almighty paycheck?
So I have wanted to joke all week and tell you that I done something at IT so I could be like the majority of the guests. But I fall more aligned with Anna. I'm in education. I'm not a teacher per se, but I work inside the classroom with students as a way to help them, almost like a hyper tutor. Like, I'm not necessarily just a tutor, but I help with college, finding funding for STEM activities that work in mathematics and science and those things. And like I said, I help to try to get them ready for college, help them find funding for college or technical school, whatever they choose to do, and help them have a mentor kind of in their life that's in the classroom with them that encourages them to better themselves, seek more for themselves, and not just accept the mundane as what they need to continue with.
Mad respect. Mad
awesome.
Respect.
From me too. And just once upon a time, I was in education myself, and we really could have used somebody like you back then. But glad you're doing the job now. I can definitely see you doing that and encouraging young people to, you know, take their best path. So props to you for that for damn sure. So let's get into the on ice action. Now that we've done the intros. So there was one game that was played this whole week. Yes, we've run into one of those crazy potholes in the schedule. I still think the schedule maker should be investigated for some sort of illegal substance that they're taking.
Way back to backs, and then these two big long stretches of a week to 6 days. Like, I'm having withdrawals, man. Like, I almost rewatched that Carolina game just before this, just so I could do something.
Well, some might have called you a glutton for punishment because this, we're not gonna spend a whole lot of time on this though, because part of it because it was so bad, and part of it because we've got some ideas or topics to discuss. This being a roundtable style episode, so we're gonna blitz through this like a hurricane, pun intended, by the way. Okay, so I don't even know if I want to bother going through the scoring sequence. They jumped out to a 2-0 lead in the first period. Stepan and Natchez with the two goals about 5 minutes apart. Tom Wilson made it 2-1 unassisted, 6:47 into the second. And then the guy I hate, he's missing some letters in his last name, Sebastian Aho, with his 29th minute, 3-1.
And it is not the one who plays for the Islanders, might we?
No, no, not that guy.
Yeah, Sebastian Aho.
Yeah, and then that kind of it kind of steamrolled from there. And then after that, Brett Pesci, no, he doesn't think you're amusing. And then Natchez again, and Brady Shea. And really, the only highlight in this game, if you were the Caps fan, was the fight between Tom Wilson. Well, round one was a no-go because Brendan Smith turtled, literally, almost literally. And then round two, he got the snot beaten out of him. So, but yeah, if you were a Caps fan, Tom's goal and that fight was literally the only two highlights in this game. Otherwise, it was unwatchable. And yeah.
Well, Eller had that big hit too at the end of the game too, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. And that was, now that you mention it, that was, somewhat controversial. I believe it was Jesper Kotkaniemi that was on the receiving end of that. And I don't think it was the hit so much that hurt him, what so much as he was kind of in an awkward position to begin with.
Yeah, he snapped his leg, man.
he was bent over, and it was all around bad timing. And it's
I think it was a bad hit.
No, if I don't. If it had been in any other point in that game, I don't think it would have been that big of a deal. But people get to point that there was not much time left on the clock. It was kind of unnecessary.
Yeah.
And all I can point to was the entire game was physical.
Yeah.
It's just how things played.
Hey, yeah, hockey, football, lacrosse, whatever. You're out there, you're going to get hit, man.
Yeah. And that bears out in the looking over the stats. 45 hits for the Caps in this game, 26 for Carolina. I'm kind of dubious about this particular statistic. It just doesn't ever seem like if you win this category, you win the game. At least not for the Caps.
Just about to ask you that because I've noticed that in the last year that anytime that our hits are extremely high. Especially if we're beating the other team in the hits category, it seems like we're not putting pucks in the net.
Right. And so that's one of the Caps' specialties is to play a heavy game and to kind of create space for themselves by doing that. But when they overdo that, they tend to lose focus. And I think that's really what happened here is that they lost focus almost after the first 5 minutes and they just never got it back. And I would like to say this game is an anomaly, but unfortunately, I've seen this play out so many times over the last couple seasons. So I'm a little concerned that this will become a pattern later on, but maybe not. That's where coaching plays a role here in, steering these guys to, something of some better habits here, I'm hoping at least.
That's a good point right there. It's all in the coach. Because anybody can have a bad day or a bad game. And, up until, Wilson scored that goal, I mean, we had a chance. And then suddenly the wheels came off. And I'm wondering, because sometimes you can feel it. Watching a game, it's not our night. And then other times you're watching a game, I think these guys can pick up a second wind here. So, but at some point, they just kind of stopped trying, the way I look at it.
Well, that came off. Goal really took the wind out of their sails, though. Too, they were starting to come on. They scored that goal. They got another power play, and then all of a sudden they give up that shorty, and it just seemed to change.
Yeah.
The moment in the game for me that seemed like I knew it was going to be a long night, and our boys were going to be kind of on the back foot and probably not thinking about the game with the mentality to win and not lose. Was the power play goal with Ovi when Oshie took the penalty that nullified the goal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That did take the wind out of the sails for sure.
I feel like it set us on a path of, well, okay, it's going to be a rough night, and we're going to get physical. And it seemed like after that, that's all we wanted to do other than a beautiful goal from Tom Wilson that came a little bit later.
Mm. Well, that's a great point, Casey, because usually when the Caps have to suffer through some sort of bad call, whether it's, you know, miles and miles away from Toronto, or on the ice from the Zebras, usually the mentality of the team is, okay, well, you know what? They're trying to screw us. We are going to overcome this and play better and get legit goals and win our way, even if this is, you know, the tide is against us. And you're right, Casey. It just seemed like ever since right after that moment, the air just went out and just it was just a complete deflation. Oshie completely lost it, and I don't blame him because it was a legit call that was missed. The guy literally, I think it was Stahl that literally pulled his stick out from his hands. If that's not holding the stick, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I was astonished. Yeah.
At worst, this should have been a double minor for both players.
Yeah.
At best, it should have been Stahl to the box, period. To me, he instigated everything that come after. And I don't want to have this homer take of it, but I mean, that's exactly, if you go back and watch that game, that's what happens.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, guys, is that we got to be better than that, especially on home ice. We got to overcome those sort of obstacles and not let that, you know, make the end all to be all. And just, it's, I could see if it was an away game, but we got to protect our home. You know what I mean?
We have to stay engaged, and we have to be able to overcome those moments and keep our mentality in a mindset that we're going to play the game to win. And that's something that I've always kind of talked about with the Caps is, from what I've noticed in a year, a lot of our losses come from us playing not to lose instead of having the mentality to play to win. Because when you have a mentality to play to win, you make the right passes, you make the right reads, you find the right guys, you play the game the right way. When you're playing not to lose, you play almost too stiff and mistakes happen because you're just trying to get to the end of the game.
Yeah, we have a lot of one-point outcomes this year, that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, can always tell somebody who watches the games and watches the team closely if they can feel the attitude come off the ice, and that's exactly what you just captured, Casey. If it's that, if you can feel that, then you are paying attention. You're seeing everything that you're supposed to see, and you're watching it the right way, because that's exactly what happens a lot of nights. They play not to lose, and that's, yet I mentioned habits that the coaching staff has to refine out. That's one of them right there, is this play not to lose mentality. That's not going to cut it in the playoffs. We all know that.
No, it was absolutely our worst enemy last playoffs when we played Boston. Obviously 4 nights, I looked back at my wife and said, something's got to change.
Yep. Yep. Very, very much so. The other thing Doug mentioned, which was really a good point, had an awful lot to do with the deflation following the shorthanded goal. And that, for me, speaks of defense. And because one of the things I've been railing about is that our defense hasn't been what it ought to be for a while. I mean, people mistake that for, I won't say the G word, but what I'm trying to talk about is we need to be better on defense. And when this was clearly a steal off of the defenseman, and then suddenly we get a shorthanded goal against, yeah, that'll deflate us. So it's Gil pointed out with coaching and what Casey pointed out with the whole attitude, feeling it off the ice, this all adds up. So there's a lot of little things going against us. And I don't think we're so far off that one major thing is going to change anything. It's we've got to make those little fine-tuning adjustments. And, you know, and like Doug has said a lot of amazing things about this, you know, over the last season. I've been watching, you know, we're having our discussions back and forth, but the observation is there.
True enough. True enough. So, yeah, let's a lot of good points from you guys. Let's go ahead and put this game in the old rear view because, it was. It stunk out the joint like a big bag of Limburger cheese. It really did. And I actually stopped paying attention after the fight myself. That's how bad it was. Okay, so we are all assembled here, all five of us. Gentlemen, we're all, I would like to say, knowledgeable Caps fans. And again, thank you all for volunteering to spend your evening with me talking Caps hockey. So to that end, some of our ardent board posters and followers have posed a couple questions for all of us to discuss. Mainly I want all four of you to discuss because I want the spotlight to be on you guys as we try to do here. So we're going to go with our first question here. It's from Brad Ricucci. So he asks, who is the odd man out for game one of the playoffs if we have full health, not counting Hagelin? And he puts out some names as possible healthy scratches. JoJo, that's Marcus Johansson, who, of course, was recently picked up at the trade deadline. Connor McMichael, Lars Eller, or our new guy, Larson, who we picked up from the Coyotes. So going to start with you, Willem, if you had your way, and we get to the playoffs, who would you be your choice to out of those four to sit?
I'd be sitting Mojo. I mean, he's a known quantity, and we want to. I mean, I want to see the other guys play. I haven't seen Larson play because he's a defenseman, and it's supposed to bolster our defense. So I'd like to see him play, but we have the freedom to rotate around the different players. But Mojo is a known quantity. I like the guy. I'm going to miss Sprung. But for the rest, I mean, Eller is such a key pillar for us to have him in the, you know, sure, he's had one or two games where it's like, oh, good Lord, no, Lars, don't do that. But I mean, for the guy who scored our Stanley Cup winning goal, he's always been one of my favorite Caps. So my suggestion is that sit Mojo to begin with and then see how the rest play. I think Connor McMichael, you give him a big stage and he'll step up. I mean, he's had bad games, but the guy has got so much potential. We just got to let him shine, you know, buff him up like a good jewel, you know. That's how I see it.
I hate to interject, and I think this is a misconception that some people have had. Larson is actually a forward, but he's a defensive-minded forward. And I've heard a lot of people call him a defenseman.
Then that's my mistake because I thought we got him as a D.
Yeah.
So you are right, and I was wrong. So, I would say then play him. I still want to see him play because you know again we went out, we got the guy. I want to see how he's going to do for us. So, again, I'll stick with Mojo as the known quantity because we know what he can do for us, but I want to see what the other guys will do for us. But thanks for telling me.
I'm going to toss it over to you, Ron. What do you think of those four who should sit come playoff time, assuming we have the healthy roster?
Well, I mean – odd man out for game one is it's going to depend on what we see from Larson in the upcoming games. He would be my first choice just because, you know, we don't know about his chemistry with our team yet. However, I'm looking forward to his debut and hopefully he has good chemistry and brings some depth to our forwards. Good thing is the Coyotes retained 50% of his salary. So that's not a bad thing. Hopefully, you know, he will make a presence in our defense. I mean, he's good on penalty kills, and he's a versatile forward that can, you know, like I said, play D and can also play the wing as well. Man, I'm sad to see Sprong go, but, you know, like I said, until we see the chemistry from him, he would be the first one out. Other than that, I guess it's a toss up between Mojo or McMichael. I don't know. That's the best I can give you.
Okay. All right. Good answer. All right, Doug, going to toss it over to you. Who of those four should sit come playoff time?
Yeah, so I'm very much in the we haven't seen Larson, and what we have seen in Mojo so far, I'm just not impressed with him with his second stint here so far. McMichael's been there the entire year, and honestly, for it being his first year and everything, I'm actually very impressed with what he's done, and I think that he has a lot to offer, and he'll continue to grow. What I don't want to see is I don't want to see him sitting on the bench and not getting the playoff experience, because it'll kill us down the road. So if there's going to be either one of them, it's going to be Mojo or Larson for me. Eller is there until he's not, right? You know, he's in the lineup. I wouldn't take him out no matter what. But yeah, McMichael, I want to see him in there. I want to see him playing. I want to see him getting like quality time on the ice too, right? A lot of times, you know, Lavi only puts him in for like 3 to 5 minutes in a game, and I'm always like, that's one of the reasons why Vrana and Sprong, even if they were free agents and they had the chance to sign back here, they would never sign back here because they don't get full playing time, you know, for some of the younger kids. I want to see these guys get some playing time and see what they have to offer. So for me, it would be either Larson, although we haven't seen him play, or Mojo.
Mm-hmm. All right, Casey. So what say you to that? Who of the four should sit come playoff time?
I think I have the most dissenting opinion just because I'm trying to go from a logical standpoint and thinking about what this team's thinking about. I believe it's going to be Eller or McMichael. And as much as I don't want either one of those two to sit, we're not going to utilize picks and a good young player in Sprong and trade for two players and then set them in the playoffs. So I think Mojo and Larson are going to be safe as long as Larson can stay healthy and plays up to some type of ability. And you all have heard from the other three why Larson could be the pick. My honest opinion is, depending on how McMichael plays at the center position, if they keep testing this position of him in the center and Lars on the wing, that McMichael will see the playoff time, and it could be Eller as the odd man out.
Okay, well, my take on it is you can't – I'm going to sound like I want to have it all ways, but you cannot discount experience come playoff time. So by that logic, I say don't sit Eller. We don't know what we have in Johan Larson at all. So unfortunately, he's going to be an X factor until we see him play these 17 or 18 games or whatever is left. So we don't know what he's going to offer. But here's the thing. He's a winger. Marcus Johansson is a utility forward. So he's got value there. And so really the problem you have is if Nick Dowd is healthy, you can't have five centers. You've got Backstrom and Kuznetsov. And I'm going to preface this by saying the center position is probably the most important other than your top two defensemen come playoff time. So that's where I'm coming from with this. So the real problem is you have to play – if you're going to play McMichael, he has to play the center. He has been the most comfortable, most at ease, most functional, and best, you know, two-way. He's really starting to come into his own, and it's no coincidence that all started when the coaching staff finally decided to play him in his more natural position of center. But yep. if you do that, you either have to sit Nick Dowd or Eller. And I don't want either one of those two out, because Nick Dowd's your face-off guy. Eller's your experience. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yep. and that really boils down to, you know, who's left. So, that kind of, for me, that kind of leaves Johan Larsson out, because, well, we don't know what he's going to offer. He's from what I hear, he's great defensively, but supposedly that's what we got Mojo for. And I think it's going to be a battle between the two of them, the two Swedes, as to who plays better and who's going to be the healthy scratch. So it's going to be between those two, Larsson and Johansson. Whoever has the worst finish to the season is going to end up on the bench. I think McMichael will be worked into the lineup somehow, even with Eller. Maybe they'll work out some sort of platoon where they both play the center position. But I can't see Eller or McMichael missing playoff time. You've got to have them both in the lineup. So it's, for me, it's going to be either Larsson or Johansson that rides the bench, barring an injury. So
I do want to point out that I offer mine also as just kind of a devil's advocate kind of view when I say Eller, because everybody has pointed out Larsson. I'm with the majority of you. I mean, I'm with you all personally that I think it comes down to Mojo or Larsson, but I'm also trying to think from, do you go out and acquire two guys and then not utilize them when it counts the most?
Well,
I think the other thing that we want, do you think that Mojo stays on that first line? I mean, ever since he's been here, he's been on that first line and he's pretty much given us nothing.
I cannot stand him on the first line.
That's an extreme head scratcher, brain teaser, one for the folks at MIT for me. Why they have him on that first line? Somebody explain that to me, please.
Wish I could.
And the fact that he continues to be on that first line, like, there's been nothing that he's given, and if anything, He's actually hurt that first line more than helped.
Yeah, I do too. Honestly, I understand rotating lines and things, but we did find a couple of magical combinations of that top line that seemed to just click. Whether it was, you know, Ovi Kuzi and Wilson, or otherwise, but sometimes you have these line combinations that you find good. There's chemistry there, and then you play with the other stuff. But honestly, I'm with Doug on this one.
As much as I love the second line pairing of Mantha, Backe, or the second line trio of Mantha, Backe, and Wilson, I think that has been one of the best line combinations we've had all year. Wilson on the top line has been exceptional. But I can also make the argument that Connor Sheary has been another decent name that's been on that first line that's played a part. That's kind of looked well there. But Johansson on that top line has just got me so confused. Like, I seriously would think to play him on the McMichael, Eller, and probably TJ Oshie line of the third.
So I want to throw out something here. I've noticed that Laviolette is a bit of an old time coach in that he likes to play the hot hand. He likes to play hunches. He likes to play the guy that looks the best out there. That's why you're going to see. That's why you're going to see a Connor Sheary on the top line at times, even though. To me, anyway, he thrives more as a middle tier forward. I don't think he ought to be getting that much time on the top line, because traditionally your top line plays upwards of 20 minutes. I think he's more like a 15 to 18 minute type of guy. That's where he's always thrived. If you ask too much more of him, well, I mean, he's not a weakling. He's a smaller forward. He's not a weakling, but he's. Eventually, if you give him too much work, his body will break down. That's the worry. So, but yeah. I just, I still can't. I mean, I don't know if this is a hunch playing, you know, mojo with the top liners in the hopes of getting some sort of old chemistry back, or what it is, or maybe working him more into the lineup a lot quicker. I've always operated by the 10 game rule. It takes 10 games when you join a new team to get acclimated. And I don't know, maybe they're thinking that putting him on the top line will, you know, create that chemistry a lot faster, but I don't know. I just hope that this isn't something that's permanent, because, you know, like Doug said, it's hurt that first line, and it's really, really curtailed their production, if anything. And it's just not been good.
A theory.
Sure.
My generalized theory right now that I have with Mojo that's being on that top line is that he come in with the season where we have, I think I counted before the podcast that we have 14 games left. He's been here with us for about three. So my thought is you had about 17 games to take and look and see how he's going to play when he's on the ice playing our system. So what I have, my theory is that they're playing him top line minutes in a way to almost make up for the fact that 10 to 15 minutes that he actually should be playing, it's almost like he gets an extra game if he plays upwards of 20 minutes.
Yep, that's pretty much, yeah, I agree. That's pretty much what I'm thinking, is to accelerate that acclimation time faster. That's the only logical reason I can think to have him there, because and we're kind of lucky in that, I said this before, the teams that are behind us, they're going to have to catch fire in the ways that, hell and Hades have never ever seen to contend for a playoff spot. Thank goodness. Otherwise, this would be mind-boggling type of strategy here. I think all the tickets as far as the playoffs in the East anyway have been pretty much punched. So, you know, we do have that much, but yeah. Other than that, I don't think this is good, but I think we're all in agreement, going back to the original question, in that it's most likely going to be, out of these two, it's going to be Larson or Johansson that sits, whoever has the worst finish to the season come playoff time. So, so let's go ahead and move on to the second question. This one's from Tom Gobble. And this one might be more for our armchair GMs, because Tom's kind of one of those residents here at our group. So he asked, what do we do with our salary cap? As of now, we'll have $11 million, give or take, available next year. Both goalies, he notes, will be restricted free agents. Schultz, Kempney, Irwin, Johansson, and Larson will all be unrestricted free agents. Do you think we try and trade one of our veterans for relief, perhaps Oshie or Carlson, or even use a buyout? Who wants to feel that first?
I'll start, well, because I'm the weakest on this, but I'll say, first of all, I don't ever want to see us lose Oshie. Ever. He's one of my favorite top caps, though. Anybody else but him, and I don't mean to intrude on our top stars, whether it's Backy and Ovi, obviously, but I don't ever want to see Oshie go away. But as far as our cap space is concerned, I will defer entirely to Doug, because he is my resource when it comes to all things cap space. So
Go, Doug.
All right, Doug, you've been put on the spot.
Come on, Doug.
So, of all those names, I would probably say $11 million is like nothing. So, I probably wouldn't want to keep any of them, with the exception of figuring out which one of the two goalies they're going to keep. From everything, it seems like Sammy has kind of fallen a little bit out of favor. And Vitek is taking on that number one spot. So if we're going to hitch our saddle to Vitek for not only the rest of this year, but, for the foreseeable future, we're probably going to have to sign him. What that salary and everything is going to look like, you got to figure that's going to play into that $11 million. Then you have like $8 million, let's say, if he signs for like three, let's say, right? you got like $8 million probably to fill, what, 4 or 5 spots on the team? Yeah, so that's not quite a bit. So you're going to have to go young and probably bring up some players from the minors, sign people to short, smaller contracts. And your flip side to that is part of the question that Tom was asking is, do you trade a Carlson? Do you trade somebody who has a high salary, you know, to get some draft picks and maybe even get someone else who's younger to start the rebuild, reload, whatever the heck you want to call it. Gil knows this from the many posts I've put on there before, but like, I would not be adverse to them looking to find a way to get Carlson off the team. You know,
I'd sooner lose Carlson than I would lose Oshie. I'll put it that way.
I don't think Carlson going out the door is that much of a unpopular opinion these days. In the year that I've watched him, I know that he is a good player, and I know that he has his moments. But Gil done a study last summer where he talked about Carlson's metrics going down and down and down. And I feel like almost all of our biggest blunder plays this year, Carlson's name is somewhere in the mistake.
He is a very good offensive defenseman, but when he is your number one defenseman, he needs to be able to step up and play that number one defense role against the number one person, offensive player on the other team. And time and time again, he comes up short when it comes to the defensive side on that. Go ahead, John.
Poor John finding himself on the receiving end of so much disparagement. But, you know, if we're talking about cap space, if we got to get rid of one of our big guys, I would say that. The other thing, as far as the goalies are concerned, and I'll say it, we are flooded with good goalies. So if we have to lose whether Vitek, Sammy, or the both of them, it's not going to make any difference for me. Our other goalies, we got so many good ones that
we gotta settle on one. We gotta settle on a number one. Let's say that, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Doug is hitting a nail on a head.
Yeah.
I think Stevenson. I think I got that name right from Dartmouth. I think that he's a good prospect that's coming up.
Sure.
I don't know how close he is to being NHL ready, but last I saw, I think he had like a 30-2 record or something like that in one of the leagues. Anyway, I could be wrong about that. But as far as losing Oshie, that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's like the same as losing, like the same as you losing Ovi. I think Oshie is he's a lifer. You know, he's a cap lifer, and I'd be very disappointed to see him walk out the door.
With Oshie. Oshie brings that intangible too, right? He's a great player, but he also has something that he brings off the ice that seems to gel that team in a way that really not even Ovi or anyone else does, it seems like.
What a human being, this guy. Every time he opens his mouth, I love him like 10 times more. We lost Oshie. You'll be seeing me. I'll be inconsolable. I'll be sitting in a corner rocking back and forth, bawling my eyes out the entire time. I mean, honestly. Seriously,
I dig it.
He's what we call in basketball as the spark plug of the team. He is the guy that holds it together, and when you need a jolt, he is the guy that you can rely on to rally the team around. And if anybody has a problem with him, the whole team has a problem with you.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's not where you want to be.
Cap through and through.
Yes.
So deeply decent. He and Backstrom, like two of the most deeply decent people, I mean, human beings I've ever seen play for any hockey team. I mean, and I'm going back for, I mean, I've seen a lot of amazing players from the Doug Jarvises, Bob Gainey's and the Larry Robinsons all the way now. I mean, Oshie and Backe are two of the people who play with such heart, you know, mired in their play. To see either one of them leave would just, I don't know, I would be inconsolable.
So I actually am willing to become public enemy number one as I say this, and I'm very afraid of what will show up on Power Play Point podcast page. And Doug, you can talk to me a little bit about how the salary cap works in this situation, but let me underline, underscore, exclamation point this statement as much as possible. Oshie is my favorite player. I do not want to see him go in any capacity. But I don't think it's a trade or a buy-up that we have to worry about. He's 35 years old, and he has had several injuries over this last year. I have a fear that he could move from a active on-ice player to a coach and retire from the game this summer.
Oh, this summer, man! Don't break my heart. But listen, Casey, you're making a good point. You are. I mean,
I don't want it any more than you don't want it. I absolutely. Yeah. I'm gonna bawl my eyes out the moment. Like I said, I'm sitting in an Oshie jersey right now.
Yeah.
I love TJ Oshie.
Oh my God! Yeah.
But I just have this fear that with the injuries he's faced this season, the injuries he had at the end of last season. The turmoil that's been going on, we could see him transition into something of a coach, and I wouldn't be shocked if he isn't one of the next bench bosses in Washington.
I hope he's a better bench boss. I mean, we've got a lot of great players out there who turned out to be really lousy coaches, but you've also got a lot of great players who turn into good coaches. I mean, one of the best examples of a good player becoming a bad coach. You know, talk about Bernie Jeffrion in Montreal following the Scotty Bowman era. I mean, he didn't last very long in Montreal before Claude Drouin had to take over again. And then we're going back. I mean, just look at Adam Oates, one of our best players, and arguably one of the worst of the year. It doesn't necessarily follow that you're a great player, that you're a great coach. However, then you look at the Martin St. Louis of the world and what that guy did in Montreal and thinking, wow, that's impressive. So
I have another name in Rod Brind'Amour.
Yes. Absolutely, right.
Generally, it's the hard workers that end up being the best coaches.
And we talked about Oshie's intangible and what he brings to the locker room. To me, of all the players that I've played with, as like I said, coming from a basketball standpoint, I stopped playing basketball in high school, but I started coaching youth league and church league teams. And the best coaches that I ever got to work with or seen were former players that played that spark plug role that was also the glue guy in the locker room. Yeah. Coaching is not so much teaching the fundamentals of the game as it is encouraging and rallying your troops and holding your team together to create chemistry. And I think Oshie is such a pivotal person to that, that it makes me believe that if he was to retire and become an assistant coach, he would do very well in the role.
Well, now you're saying something there, Casey, because as far as coaching and leading people is concerned, you're not teaching anybody new. The key is drawing out the best strengths and winning the hearts and minds of the players. This is what Barry Trotz did for the Caps that got us where we were in the first place. And if you've ever watched the 1993 Montreal Canadiens Stanley Cup documentary, it is far and away Jacques Demers and the way he was able to win the hearts and minds of the Habs to get them to win in a year where no one's had, like the Canadiens had no business being in the playoffs at all in 1993, and yet they went all the way and won the cup, you know, against Wayne Gretzky and the Los Angeles Kings. So, you know, like you said, it is that ability to draw. And sidebar here, why does Blaine Forsythe still have a job? Like, why?
that wasn't one of the planned questions, but I think that it just became one.
We should table that and finish this cap space one because we could all probably rant on that. But I
totally agree with Casey. I think he's right about that. I think all five of us could go on for infinity.
That'll be a podcast in of itself.
Yeah. I need to ask Doug. I need to ask Doug, because I don't understand salary cap enough. If a player retires, how does that hit against your cap?
Because the contract is the contract goes into their late 30s. You get no relief unless you put them onto what is it called? Long-term IR, I think it is.
Yeah. TIR, long-term injured reserve. Yep.
So technically, it would still hit your salary cap unless you put them onto long-term IR, and then he's technically still on your team, just retired or whatever. So you're still paying his salary regardless.
Okay. I just needed that clarification, because I think that if we see Oshie go, to me, that's how Oshie goes, is by retirement. If he doesn't retire, he'll be here next year, and he'll be here the year after.
I think he will.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets left unprotected in the Seattle draft if that's not the case. If they don't really want him here for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
Because he would have been the team captain in Seattle, no question about it. And
100%.
I fully believe that they did not do that because he's at least in their plans in some form moving forward. Answer the original question, to me, we have to let Kempney walk. He's the first person that I say has to go. I don't want to be hard. I didn't get to watch him win the cup, but I appreciate being a fan now that he helped be a pivotal part of us hoisting Lord Stanley. But to me, he's probably seen his best days.
Oh, 100%.
I agree.
So mm-hmm. I don't expect him to be re-signed. And Mojo and Larson will both, to me, either earn or lose whatever contract they're going to have by how they play these last 14 or so games and how they look in the playoffs. To me, go ahead.
I mean, I'm cautiously but optimistic about Larson. I just, you know, like I said, he's a very versatile player. He can not only play, you know, the position that he's playing, you can always jump on the wing, you can jump on center, you can jump on defense. He's a great penalty killer. So, I think he could and hopefully will add, you know, a little bit of a spark to our lineup. We'll see.
His contract also completely hinges on how does Carl Hagelin come back out of this injury with his eye.
If he comes out.
As I've said in past episodes, and I've been hard on Hagelin before, but I don't wish any ill will. I think he does have worth, especially on the penalty kill. He's proven that many times over. But I am getting, as I said, a really bad end of career vibe. If you have to have multiple surgeries in a short amount of time on your eye, which has different dimensions. We're not talking about an arm or a leg that you can rehabilitate. We're talking about your vision.
Yeah.
You know, that's
who was the player that they just retired his jersey in Boston?
Willie O'Ree. And yes, he was actually legally blind in one eye.
Yeah.
That's what kind of in a weird way makes me wonder if they would if Hagelin would try to take another shot at it. But it really Larson's contract probably boils down to the health of Hagelin. I do think Schultz and Irwin are back next season, but I do think we start filtering in some of our young prospects.
Well, I guess to a certain degree, it kind of comes back to at what point does the organization kind of cut bait on this? We got to keep patching for this hope that we're going to get back to the Stanley Cup. You know, with older players that are, because they're getting older, they're getting slower, and this is becoming a young, fast league. You know, when do you cut bait on some of these older, higher contracts You have an opportunity with Schultz and Irwin and stuff like that to turn the other cheek and try and get some younger players in there. You know, when do they make that decision to not rebuild, but just retool and try and get younger and a little bit faster?
That's where I wonder if Anthony Mantha, if we decide to retool, if Anthony Mantha isn't a sleeper to move on. And I don't think he's a
sleeper, though. So he's only, what, 25, 26?
Yeah.
I like Mantha a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely love Mantha, but there's only certain players that I feel are incredibly untouchable. And especially if we're going to realize that the window is closed and we're not going to necessarily retool, Mantha's one of the ones that I could see us getting draft capital out of. And that's just me coming from years of, like I said, whenever you start kind of closing your window, you start moving on some of your better, not necessarily younger players, but players that are starting to age or are still in their prime. You move on for the draft capital that you can get them. And I'm speaking completely out of turn on this. I don't think Mantha's on the chopping block. It's just, that's my, you have to at least wonder if that's not a thought.
Sure.
Hey Doug, what what benefit is it for us being haggling? We're talking about his vision. That's what took Bernie Parent out from me, from the Flyers back in the 70s. It was an eye injury and that ended. And I'm having a feeling you got to think of the humans, you know, the human aspect of the hockey players too. And it might be better for all long term for Carl Hagelin just to retire, you know, welcome in our organization in some other capacity. But from a player point of view, will that give us additional cap space for maybe a younger, better player, make room for someone? You know, we're talking about Larson as a very versatile utility player. So maybe to replace Hagelin.
Well, I took the liberty just now of bringing up cap friendly, and he is actually on contract for counting this year two more years. So next year is actually his last year, and right now they would be getting $2.75 million in relief. So. I don't see – well, he's actually on LTIR right now officially.
Mm-hmm.
The
Coyotes are paying 50% of his contract still, so
– Well, that's Larson. I'm actually talking about –
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking
Carl
about
Hagelin.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. Hagelin's actually officially on LTIR, so we don't know how long that's going to be. That's probably going to be all through, well, most through, if not all through next year. So you have that to work with as far as that goes. now, my take on Tom's question, though, is, I want to kind of draw in what Doug was alluding to in that when do the Caps actually start their rebuild is probably another way this could have been phrased. Say this year is probably the last best chance, probably the final closing of the window. The window was quote unquote closed supposedly at the end of 2017.
Right.
And then the Caps caught lightning in a bottle with no small efforts of Eller and Devontae Smith Pelly and Kempney and guys like that, helping them with one last push. That Ovi for sure, but leading the way. But the window has actually been closed technically, and this year is probably the last best chance this team as we know it has right now. So to answer that part of the question, this is it. And if management is serious about something of a rebuild or retool and not just patching holes, like Doug said, then they're going to start getting rid of some of these contracts. They're going to start onboarding some of these younger guys, some of which looked like they could be full-time, some of which not so much. The coaching staff and management is going to have to figure all of that out. But I think a great start would be and I'm with Doug and Casey on this. I think a great start would be getting rid of that $8 million contract that belongs to John Carlson, because the entire decor right now is 30 years old or older, and he's one of the oldest, if not the oldest, and his defensive metrics have been going off a cliff for quite some time now. He's a great puck mover. He's a great offensive defenseman. He's still worthy of that as far as a top four pairing, but we cannot rely on him to play upwards of 25 minutes or more and expect him to help keep the puck out of the net any longer past this year. So I think that would be, if they're really serious about that, that would be a great first move. I love what he's done for us as far as being an offensive defenseman, but I think going forward, we need to find someone else who is a lot more mobile and a lot younger and certainly a lot cheaper. Maybe somebody who's not ready for number 1 minutes, maybe a mid minutes. I mentioned this guy in a couple of episodes, John Klingberg. From Dallas. I really, really wish the Caps went after him. He fits that bill, but wasn't meant to be. But yeah, maybe through the draft or free agency, but they've got to find a younger, cheaper replacement for him soon, because there will come a day where he will be too much of a liability if we're not already there. So that's my take on it. I mean, it's the simplest solution. You get rid of that contract. It gives you a lot of maneuverability, a ton of it. And they need it, because even with the LTIRs and, hopefully signing players to cheaper contracts, you still have the goalie situation to address. You still got to sign one of those two to something of a bridge or long-term contract. You got to take care of that. You've got others that need to be signed. You got some, utility players you could probably get for some kind of cheap, but the salary cap's only going up $1 million. You're not getting that much help from the league. So, I mean, it might upset some fans of Carlson out there, but to me, that's where you start. That's the logical place to start. Get rid of that contract, get what you can for it while he's still considered top 15, top 20 defenseman, however you want to look at it, and give yourself some room and maybe, get somebody younger on the back line. That's what I would do.
Yeah, and I'll even say, like, right now for him, across the league, he's still highly regarded, right? So you can still get max value for a trade from him. You do it now while it's still relatively hot. Mm-hmm. You don't wait until the point where you see the diminishing returns and then you're getting, like, next to nothing and you're just unloading the salary. Get it while people are going to be willing to give you quite a bit in return.
That's a good point. Yeah, no, I think I'm on board with this.
Yeah,
I completely forgot my breakdown of what I would do with the salary cap to even address the goalie situation, but that's a dead horse.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Casey. So we got time for one last question, and I promised myself I would not address this, but one of my most passionate and loyal listeners, Tony Stillard, mentioned this also in the room. So I promised him I'd try and squeeze it in. He did post a question about, despite my pleadings, he did post a question about the goalie situation. I think this is going to be fairly easy though, because Doug already hit upon it. We have to name a number one, and Vitek Vanacek has pretty much claimed that spot. So to kind of take over and run with Tony's question, do the four of you think Vitek Vanacek is going to be enough? Is he going to be the guy to carry everything, steal the games when necessary in the playoffs, and run with this team and be the backstop that's necessary? Or is it possible that Samsonov could see the ice for part of any series?
Do you all mind if I start on this?
Go right ahead, Casey.
Knock it out.
So I had mentioned in the group chat while we were planning this episode that I had a little bit of a theory, and I think it actually goes It answers Anna's question as well as this one. Anna's question last week of why do we seem to play different in front of the goalies, depending on which one is which. I think VTech is the solid option for us moving forward. I do think that fundamentally he is the most sound of the two. And I think that you see that in the way that the five players on the ice in front of him play. So to me, there is a reliance there or a comfortability with VTech that they're willing to play more like they're supposed to. And it's probably time that we do let Sammy move. That's why I thought at the trade deadline, we might see Sammy move so we don't have to deal with the RFA situation at the end of the year. But as I was saying, my theory is that based on the style of play that you get from VTech and you get from Sammy, whenever Sammy is in net, I think because he plays such an athletic style that almost shies away from the way fundamental hockey is played in the net, that our players, specifically our D, have to be out of position to almost overcorrect where he overcorrects. That if he's going to be out of position to make the athletic play, they almost have to put themselves out of the best position for themselves. When VTech is in goal, and this is why I trust in VTech, is because he plays such a fundamental style of hockey where he is not necessarily out of position a lot, that the defense and the forwards, when they're in the D zone, can do their jobs. They aren't as worried about VTech being out of position or away from the net or just causing some type of, you know, going so athletic that if he doesn't grab the rebound, that the rebound control is going to cause a net to end up in the back or a puck to end up in the back of the net. They have almost a better trust in VTech. And what makes me think that he can be relied on moving forward is as he grows and he gets more play and he's more comfortable, he's actually going to take some of his natural athleticism and be able to start making big saves that steal you games. I think fundamentals in any sport are the most important thing. And if you don't have that before you reach the top level, it's too hard to teach a player how to pick that up and move forward. I see it all the time in basketball players. We go off athleticism a lot, and you'll see those players fizzle out in a few years. But most athletic players don't make it if they don't have a great understanding of the fundamentals of the game. Same with football players, and it seems to be true in hockey as well. If you can play fundamental, good hockey at your position, knowing what you're supposed to do and doing your job correctly, the athleticism that you have to be at that level, because all of them have to have some type of freak athleticism, to be at that level, you will be able to make up for it then. But you have to play from a fundamental standpoint.
I don't know how you guys are going to top that, but love to hear all your opinions on that. But I think Casey nailed it.
Yeah, Casey, you did a great job with that. I was trying to think, like, who VTech kind of reminds me of that's outside of hockey. And the only thing that I could come up with is Cal Ripken. And if you think of, like, Cal Ripken when, you know, those of you that are in this area, Cal Ripken was not the most athletically gifted shortstop. You know, he wasn't the fastest or anything like that. But whenever a ball was hit to him, like, he never had to move, right? Like, the ball came right to him, and because he positioned himself in the perfect spot, and it was just effortless in how he did things. And VTech does the same thing in a lot of ways too. Like, his mechanics are good. He doesn't, although the last couple of games there's been more rebounds, typically he doesn't allow a ton of rebounds, and like, he's just fundamentally sound, and that helps the defense know how they're going to play. To Casey's point, you know, Sammy, and I still say Sammy's probably has the higher ceiling, but he also has the higher, floor, or the bigger floor, or whatever you want to call it, you know? And you see that because he's so erratic at times. You know, so I think Vitek has solidified himself just simply off the fact that he's consistent. And the fact that he is consistent, the defense plays better in front of him.
Yeah,
and I want to point out that I absolutely love Sammy and I love Vitek. And I think both are excellent goalies and can be number one goalies in this league. But for my money, I want the fundamental player. It's always going to be that way for me. One of my favorite basketball players is Tim Duncan, the big fundamental. He won all of his championships in San Antonio, not because he was flashy, but because he was the best player on the floor that knew the game the best. And yeah. I hate to say it, he took a championship from LeBron James, who kind of is the opposite.
I love what Casey said. Doug kind of underscored it, and I'm on board with that. For me, it's definitely Vitek, and you know, if we have to lose one, I'd rather lose Sammy for the same reasons. The other thing is the confidence of the players. Players play better in front of them. So, and most of the knocks against our goalies have been caused actually by defensive failures. I mean, I've seen these goalies play, and I've seen good goalies, and I've seen bad goalies in my day. I mean, I've seen the Richard Walmsleys, I've seen the Richard Sevigny's, I've seen, you know, Clint Malarchuk's, I've seen Ken Dryden, you know, from way back when. And in the end, we've got some really top-notch goalies, but I've also seen Zach Fucal play, I mean, and he's our guy. I'd rather see a tandem, you know, with Vitek and Fucal. That's me, you know, but that also gives us some ability to shop around Samsonov if we had to. So, yeah.
I do believe Fucalian and Vanacek will be our goalies for the 2022-2023 season.
Yep, I agree.
I feel it in my bones.
You know, I want to interject one thing. I love the analysis that you made, Casey, and on a future podcast, I would love, love, love to hear you with an analysis of how to improve our power play. And I think it's one of those things that could take us another hour and a half, but I love the way
you... Yep. It really
first could, thing is yeah. New slingshot.
I would love yeah. that.
Yeah.
No more slingshot, please. Oh, yeah. My God.
Okay, so I can cut slingshot, and when you don't stand still and you move, mm-hmm. you get open. And when you're open, you can shoot the puck.
Right.
Yeah. For sure.
Yes. Okay, Ron, take it home. What do you think of the can you build on what everyone has said about the goalie situation? What's your take on it?
No one's going to like what I have to say. I mean, obviously, Vitek has better stats than Sammy does. You have, 2.5 goals to 2.9 goals a game. So, you know, all in all, they're really not that far apart. But Vitek definitely does have the better stats. He's the better goalie going forward. However, I would love to see us ultimately get someone better in goal. I'm not sold on either one of them, to be honest with you. That's just me. I'm just putting it out there. And I was optimistic at the beginning of the year because I thought that we had a good 50-50 tandem between the two of them. And as the season has gone on, yes, I agree with what you guys are saying. The team does seem to play better in front of Vitek. The problem with Sammy that I've seen is his control, him not being able to control the puck, and those juicy rebounds just come out and bam, they're putting it in the back of the net. But ultimately, I would love to see us keep fighting for a better goalie. I think we have some good guys in the farm system coming up. What's the guy? Clay Stevenson. I think I mentioned him earlier. From Dartmouth, I think if he continues to build, he might be something for us to see in the future. But we definitely, as in every position, you know, we need to keep building and need to see what we can do best. But that's just my take on it, guys. Thanks.
No, I agree. And go ahead.
I completely agree as well. And I don't think that I don't really think that it puts you kind of off a little bit. Like, you know, you said you're probably not, we're not going to like it. As long as we're getting better at the position, I don't care. Do I? I think VTech is capable. I do. I wonder about Sammy. I even think Sammy's capable, but I think Sammy lacks something that he needs that it's going to cause him. He's almost like the analogy of Icarus. If he flies too high, he's going to burn his wings and he's going to crash.
I like that. I like that.
And it terrifies me.
A lot like what Doug was pointing out there, but I will like to say this as one of my last little points in this particular podcast is, you know, I love the exchange of ideas here, and even with ideas that I may not necessarily agree with, I love how people presented it, and I don't think we're too terribly far apart, to be honest with you, but I love this exchange of ideas, so I was really glad to be part of this.
Absolutely, yeah,
as was I.
That's I am awesome. Still starstruck to get to be on my favorite Capitals podcast. No, not even, no cap. So no. Excited.
You were awesome, dude. You are definitely a star in the making.
Oh, yeah, we love you, Casey. We do. We definitely do.
Well, glad to hear it. But if anybody cares, I have a take on the goalie situation, even though we've done it to death. Okay, so to kind of wind up the discussion yes, there's some points here to be taken. VTech, as I've said, is the de facto number one. They finally decided on him as the number one, and it's only made him better. It's given him that confidence, and it's showing in the games, and it's translating to the defense as we've talked about. Now, that said, pardon me, that does not mean that he's not at his best right now. His ceiling hasn't been hit yet. And for that matter, neither has Sammy's. They both have a ways to improve. And I have not changed my mindset in that the both of these guys are worth keeping. They can only get better with age and time and experience and the proper coaching. I'm a little sour on Mitch Korn leaving. I think his leaving was a little bit more of a blow even than Barry Trotz, and I loved Barry Trotz.
Yeah.
Without that off-ice guidance, and maybe this was the case, as has been mentioned before, to get a veteran netminder, and if they decide to part ways with one of these guys, then they really would need to go after a mentor type goalie, somebody that would be that steadying influence.
End up being a falter like Lundqvist, God.
Well, that was a special situation, and as much as I'd love to see Holtby, I don't see that happening. But
I don't either. But it's just my hope.
Yeah. If they are going to part ways with one of those two guys, then they need to bring somebody older who can be a mentor, even if they end up being the backup. The best situation I can think of in Caps history or recent Caps history is when they went with a goalie tandem of Olaf Kolzig and Craig Billington. That kind of
interesting.
Kolzig was on his way to being elite level. He wasn't there yet. It wasn't until they named Craig Billington the full-time backup that he hit that status because he provided that steadying influence. And I think it's obvious to all five of us that something like that is necessary here. So they can go one of two directions here. They can decide to keep them both and let them invest them in them and grow the both of them. And I think for the foreseeable future, they'll be your tandem. Or they can go in another direction entirely and part ways with one of them and get that mentor, if not for a 1 or 2 year or short-term contract, get whoever stays over that last hump, just as Billington did for Kolzig, and you know, go from there. One of those, that's how I see the scenario playing out. Now, pardon me again. As far as Zach Fucali, he still has a role to play in all this, but it might end up being with another team. If they do not call him up and make him a permanent backup, I don't see them holding on to him. I see them being used as a bargaining chip because he's shown many times over what he can do at any level. So it doesn't make sense to just let him sit in the minors when you can either play him or trade him. So I think ultimately, I don't want to say he's the odd man out, but he's going to be that bargaining chip, either him or Samsonov. But I'm leaning towards Fucali because he actually has more going for him right now, I think, in that he's more marketable, I would think, because he might be older, but I think he could step onto the ice as, at the very least, a backup and provide immediate dividends. I really do think that. So that's yet another scenario, but that's my take on it. Just want to wrap things up here. Thought? I'm sorry?
Can I add one last thought?
Sure.
Maybe we should spend some of our money this summer in investing in development style coaches. That would be better to pull up some of our younger players. Because that's, you know, it's a lot of what I'm hearing as well, is that there has to be some type of influence, a setting influence from what you're saying. And maybe if we're not necessarily trying to push for the cup, it might be time for some development coaching.
Well, it's not unusual for a team to go that route. In fact, they had one in Michael Pekka, and I don't know what happened with him, but he took another job somewhere, and I wish he hadn't, because the Caps vastly improved on overall on-ice play, especially face-off, when he was here, and then he left, and then that's kind of gone by the wayside. But yeah, that's a great point. I hope they do find somebody that kind of fits that role. I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there that could fit that bill. Maybe somebody who's just retired and wants to go into coaching could fill that type of mentorship role. So it'd be great for them to hire somebody like that. So that's another good point. Okay. So, we're kind of hitting the time crunch here. The next game against the Minnesota Wild is due to actually start in about 15 minutes or so, and it's at Cap One. So don't want any of us to miss that. So we're going to wrap it up here. All four of you, Doug, Casey, Willem, Ron, all of you, thank you, gentlemen, all so much for coming on. And each and every one of you did a wonderful, awesome job, giving your knowledge and point of view and speaking your minds. And that's all we could ask for here. And love every one of you for doing it.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure.
A pleasure. So thankful to have the opportunity.
Okay, great.
Oh, and so welcome, Casey. Welcome to the band.
That's right.
Welcome, Casey.
Casey, you did an awesome job. Thanks for coming on and getting your first time out of the way, as they say.
Anytime.
All right. So for Doug Lucerarian, Casey Malone, Willem Bagus, and Ronnie Schrantz, this is the Blue Liner on Point signing off and reminding you that the difference between a bad sniper and a constipated owl, well, one can shoot but not hit, while the other can hoot but not shit.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
That's going in the bad dad joke drawer.
Right.
All right. Well,
hallelujah, and let's go, Caps.
Go Caps.
Rock the red. Let's go, Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast. Thanks for listening.